And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Prior to Dick Cheney, perhaps the most controversial vice president in American history was Aaron Burr. While he was vice president, he shot and killed Alexander Hamilton. Later in life, he was tried for treason. But I would venture to say that compared to Dick Cheney, Aaron Burr was a piker. After all, Dick Cheney has done the requisite shooting a man, and Seth definitely should be tried for treason. But as I read today's Washington Post and yesterday's Washington Post, and I'm assured there's two more very long articles to go tomorrow and the next day, even I, who knew so much about the horrible things that Dick Cheney had done to our country, even I am a bit stunned by the power of this diabolical man, the lawlessness, the secret government. If there's anyone that brought our country closer to the Soviet Union or Nazi Germany, I don't know of one than Dick Cheney. I want to discuss Dick Cheney today. I want to invite you to call in and share your comments. It's easy to do. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK. And I've also invited Mike Lane to my right. Mike Lane is the president of Intellifed Strategies. It is his job to give political countenance to Republicans, to teach them what's right, at least in the world of politics. And I'm glad Mike's here because I consider him usually to be one of those reasonable Republicans. Surely he won't defend the likes of what we've seen Dick Cheney do in the Washington Post. Or will you, Mike?
Well, Mark, we'll get into this over the course of the next hour, but one thing from reading these Washington Post articles becomes clear. Probably the most important reason that we have not been attacked again as we were on September 11th is because of the actions taken by the vice president in terms of enhancing presidential authority to make war and carry out the things that are necessary to protect the life and safety of the American people.
That's pretty good spin, Mike. Of course, it's absolute rank speculation. I guess it was Vice President Cheney is the reason why America was not attacked in the Clinton administration from 1993 to 2000 either, right?
No.
He gets credit for that. I mean, that was 7 years. That was a longer period of
time.
Well,
I'd like to give him credit for that, but unfortunately, I think the real credit for that goes to the fact that Al-Qaeda was not ready to launch the attack at that point. They were not able to pull off something on the scale of September 11th. However, they were able to do a number of other smaller things, as you know. There was the embassy bombing. There was the coal bombing. A number of things that were attacks against us. There was even a World Trade Center bombing. It was just not an aircraft that flew into it, and it turned out to be not enough and you know, killed five people very, very tragically, but nothing on the scale of what we saw on September 11th.
It's fascinating to me what you've done here, Mike, because here we read in gory detail, page after page after page in these Washington Post articles of secret government, secret police, spying on American citizens without a warrant, approving torture, actually wanting to overturn the Geneva Conventions, which are designed to prevent another Holocaust, actively keeping members of the government out of the loop, taking the Constitution and literally laughing at it as he tears it to shreds, piece by piece by piece. And yet you speculate, oh, that this may have kept us safe, where there's absolutely no evidence of that anywhere except your rank speculation.
Well, the evidence is that we have not been attacked since September 11th and 2001. That's 7 years or
well,
6 years.
Anthrax, anyone?
Every one of us would have expected that we would have been attacked at some point in that time, but yet it hasn't happened. Now, you bring up the anthrax thing. Unfortunately, we still don't know what the story with the anthrax mailings was. Richard Reed was caught.
Well, he was caught.
Right,
he was caught. Not due to Dick Cheney, but due to the fact that the passengers stopped him on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing to me that you would give Dick Cheney credit for this when, just for example, one thing in the article, they talk about the Australian, a guy by the last name of Hicks, and he's kept in Guantanamo Bay.
Mm-hmm.
He's tortured. He is sodomized with a broom handle.
We
can give the details here. I mean, they're not pretty.
All right.
Let's see here. He's subjected to beating, sodomy with a foreign object, sensory deprivation, disoriented drugs, and prolonged shackling in painful positions, all of which, according to Dick Cheney, are not torture. Because in Cheney's view, the only torture is organ failure or death. I actually think death is not really torture at all because it's death. I mean, you can't really torture a dead person. So really, it's just organ failure, which means rape is fine. Everything that happened at Guantanamo Bay, everything that happened at Abu Ghraib, I don't think any of them led to organ failure. So basically, everything they did would be okay. Heck, even some of the Nazi experiments would be okay in Dick Cheney.
Well, you know, if you want to talk about Abu Ghraib, most of what happened there was not torture. Most of that was personal humiliation, which does have a discussion of it in the Geneva Convention. As you know, the Geneva Convention did not apply to any of the enemy combatants.
As I know, well, that's absolutely false. No, the Geneva Convention expressly applies to everyone, civilians and combatants.
No, the Geneva Convention applies to people who, number one, acknowledge and are signatory to the Geneva Convention, and number two, comply with it.
That's not true. That's the problem. You're starting to believe
some
of the stuff that
now,
Dick Cheney's lawyers have put out.
What we don't have here is we don't have anybody who was wearing a uniform on the battlefield, which is required under the Geneva Convention,
no,
as you know. Yes, it is. We don't have anybody who is following a legitimate chain of command, which is required under the Geneva Convention, as you know. These people were enemy combatants. They were not entitled to the to any of the protections of the Geneva Convention. We were nice enough to give them some and treat them relatively well compared to the way they treated our people that they caught. And I, you know, if I had a choice between being held by their people or being held by our people in Abu Ghraib, I'd ask to be held by our people in Abu Ghraib.
I'm not so sure, frankly.
Okay. Well, I suppose Daniel Pearl got off pretty easy, didn't he?
No, he sure didn't. But of course, we've murdered our own in custody as well, and I think Dick Cheney is largely responsible for that. What bothers me is that the way you're talking about the Geneva Convention is I know it's part of the Republican talking points. But it's simply not true. Geneva 3, Geneva 4, and as we read in the Washington Post, Geneva rules forbade not only torture, but also the use of violence, cruel treatment, or humiliating and degrading treatment against any detainee at any time, quote, and in any place whatsoever. You don't have to be... Now, you're true that to be treated as a prisoner of war, you have to be wearing a uniform. But Geneva doesn't just protect prisoners of war. It protects civilians. It protects anyone, in fact, who's taken in on the battlefield.
It does not protect illegal enemy combatants, which is what these people were.
Of course it does.
No. We'll argue about that.
Well, we don't have to argue about it.
Maybe the Supreme Court will give us a decision on that.
When our allies, Great Britain, says we can't give you prisoners because Cheney wants to torture them and we don't want to be prosecuted for war crimes, that's a serious problem.
Actually, I don't think they mentioned the vice president's name in that. But
here's the thing. The vice president himself was worried about being tried for war crimes. And let me suggest to you that that worry is absolutely valid. Because the things that he proposed were treated as war crimes. Waterboarding was a war crime and has been treated as a war crime since 1901 in the United States. Only Dick Cheney could take a war crime and say everything's okay. And here's the thing. Cheney knew that this was against the law. That's why he didn't inform Congress, he didn't inform the courts, he didn't even inform most of the people in the administration. Condoleezza Rice, if you read through these articles, Rice is surprised, Powell is surprised, Attorney General Ashcroft is surprised, because all these things are blatantly illegal throughout the entire government.
What you have here, Mark, is a vice president who took very, very seriously his oath of office, working for a president who took very, very seriously his oath of office. And they were pledged to protect and defend the people of the United States.
No.
Yes, they
were. That's not what the oath is.
Okay.
What's the oath? You know the oath that the president takes.
You know, I took it once.
I'll read it if you like. It's to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States.
And
that's right. Because I'll tell you something. Every dictator, the pikers like Saddam Hussein and the serious ones like Hitler and Stalin, will tell you they're doing it for their people. They're fighting for the Iraqi people, for the Soviet people, for the German people. All dictators will say that.
Mm-hmm.
But what distinguishes our government, I thought, from dictatorship was defending this Constitution, was defending checks and balances, was avoiding secret government, avoiding secret police. And if there's one thing that's very clear in all of this, it's that Dick Cheney does not believe in checks and balances, and he does not believe in open government.
There's no requirement that there not be secrets held by the government. That's why the system of classification of information has been established, and there are certain things that are widespread in every particular department that we have has classified information. So that's sort of a red herring. what the vice president and the president did together, and the article makes clear that the vice president was not some rogue vice president who was out there doing what he, what Democrats accuse him of, which is running the country secretly with the president not knowing anything. It made clear that he was doing the bidding of the president, that they worked together well as a team, that they had the same goals and the same objectives. The president set and approved the broad policy, and the vice president was very active in certain areas in terms of establishing and implementing the details. And to the extent that they created some excesses, which they did, those excesses have been reined back in by the courts, and the administration is complying with anything that they've been reined back in on. And so it seems to be clear that they took very, very seriously their responsibilities to protect the United States from attack by a foreign entity, in this case, Al-Qaeda or any one of their offshoots, and they have done a superb job. Have they gone too far in certain cases?
Oh.
I believe so, yes. You believe so, yes. But they have done their job.
Mike, before this show, you told me that you were not going to play devil's advocate.
I'm not playing
now,
devil's advocate.
I understand that anytime you defend Dick Cheney, you are by definition the devil's advocate.
No,
I get that.
I'm the angel's advocate. He's the one who has put...
Dick Cheney's an angel.
He is the angel.
The angel of death, I understand.
No, he's
Look,
the angel. He's the one who has taken seriously the nature of the enemy.
Not at
the
all.
The threat and
Let's talk
and
about
put
what happened
into...
with the Australian, Richard Hicks, because this is a very interesting case, all right? They think... Cheney claims he's this awful bad guy. He must be, after all, since we beat him and sodomize him and give him drugs and shackle him in painful positions. All right. Now, they offered after Australia basically said, we're not going to participate in this war unless you treat this guy under international law. I know Dick Cheney didn't want to do that. They offered to drop his sentence from 20 years in prison to 9 months if Hicks would say that he'd never been illegally mistreated, if he would lie under oath, and he would say that he was guilty. Now, here's the thing. If Hicks is an extremely dangerous terrorist, he shouldn't be let go after 9 months. And if he's not an extremely dangerous terrorist, why do we torture him?
Well, we don't know yet whether he is or he is not an extremely dangerous terrorist.
Doesn't matter. Either way,
there is evidence
we torture him, and then we can let him go after 9 months?
If he had certain information that would have proved useful to defending the people of the United States from attack, I think that the administration's policy of robust interrogation is certainly an appropriate policy. Now, were there specifics in that particular case that have been cited that I would disavow? Yes, absolutely. I think they went too far in his particular case.
It's far from Hicks.
No.
It's far from only Hicks. I mean, there's Meher Arar, the person that was changing planes in JFK, who we sent to Syria to be tortured. There's the fact that we even have these secret prisons. And then Bush comes on TV and says that he's going to get rid of the secret prisons, but has admitted 7 months later he's going back to doing it again. My question to you, it's clear to me that Dick Cheney does not believe that the Constitution of the United States applies to him. It clearly believes that the president has pure tyrannical power. The president has, according to Dick Cheney, more power than George III ever had over the American colonies. And frankly, if you read the Declaration of Independence, George III seems like a pretty nice guy compared to Dick Cheney. I don't remember him sodomizing Americans. Maybe he did. I certainly don't remember him waterboarding American revolutionaries. Look, what are the limits, if any, on the president?
The obligation of the president is to protect and defend the United States. It's not just the Constitution. We need to defend the country. There is a severe, legitimate threat out there, and the president needs to have wartime powers that will allow him to accomplish his mission. That's critical.
Let me encourage you folks to call in and let your voice be heard. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. What do you think about the diabolical Dick Cheney? We'll be right back after this.
Me and Jenny were jumping on it. Mommy's gun fell on the floor. I was a cowboy. Bang, 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 bang. I said, Jenny, wake up, wake up. It's just pretend. But she wouldn't wake up.
If you give me a fish...
If you give someone a fish...
You feed them for a day.
teach someone to fish.
You feed them for a lifetime.
Give me a fish, and you'll feed me for a day. Teach me to fish, and you'll feed me for a lifetime.
Through Volunteers of America, you can help change lives in your community.
Oh, hey, mister. Studied algebra in school and got a better job than I could. You take the last cup.
Oh, no, mister. Stuck in an entry-level job because you only learned basic math. I don't have a boss riding my butt like you do, so you take it so you can get back to your desk.
You know, I probably should, but maybe Miss AP Calculus with the $200 haircut in the big office upstairs would like a cup.
Oh, no, mister. What was your name again? Never mind, it doesn't matter. I'm too busy doing important things to care. I just came down for some sweetness, sir.
You know, if my limited math abilities weren't keeping me from getting a better job, I'd quit this afternoon.
I don't blame you. But thank goodness you're stuck here because we really need someone to make the coffee.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm serious about your joining in this debate. It's easy to do. You don't have to agree with me. You don't have to agree with Mike. You may have your own view. You may just have a question about why we believe the way we do. We do want to hear from you. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK. In the break, Mike and I were talking about the role of the president. And you, Mike, said the president has an absolute, what were you saying, an absolute...
Responsibility.
To defend the people of the United States.
To defend the country and the people of the United States.
And I said it ain't absolute.
In his role as Commander-in-Chief.
I said it ain't absolute. Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution gives the actual oath the president must solemnly swear to when he becomes president. I will read it in full. The president must say, I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. What that means, my friends, is that the president, as commander-in-chief, does not have absolute power. He's not a tyrant. Our Führer. He can only act within constitutional limits. And the extent that he acts beyond constitutional limits and acts against the laws by this Constitution, he is not only subject to impeachment, in my view, but in many cases would be subject to war crimes.
I didn't say he had absolute power. I said he had absolute responsibility to protect and defend the United States and the people of our country.
Yes.
And I believe that.
And you don't think it can be done within the limits of the Constitution.
And the role that's vested in him as Commander-in-Chief by the Constitution requires that he do that. Now, there are certain things that you're going to have areas in conflict and certain gray areas that will be worked out over time, over precedent, over lawsuits, over court decisions, things like that, over congressional tugs of war with the president. They've been done. I mean, we go back to 1974, I think it was, when the Congress passed the War Powers Act. And every president since then has, you know, claimed that the War Powers Act is unconstitutional and they're ignoring it. And the Congress, of course, says, well, no, we passed the War Powers Act and, you know, it's very important to us and you shall comply with it. But yet it's never been resolved and we've had that tug of war going on. We're going to have tugs of war in every single area on this thing because sometimes it is very, very clear to the Commander-in-Chief what is necessary to protect and defend the country and the people of the United States. And it's not all that clear to Congress because they don't have access to the same information that he has. So does he have an absolute power to do everything? No, doesn't have absolute power, but he has absolute responsibility to protect the country.
And here's what I don't understand. Dick Cheney does not seem to feel that there are any limitations on the President of the United States. He actually used the authorization to use force in Iraq, where mm-hmm. Congress said, in effect, we want Saddam Hussein to disarm, we'll give you the authorization to use force so you can support the inspectors. He said that gave him authority to spy on American citizens that had nothing to do with Iraq, to hold American citizens indefinitely without trial, to deny them any attorney in express contradiction of the Sixth Amendment, to torture, cruel, inhumane, and degrading conduct. In his mind, of course, ripping off fingernails would not be torture, or putting someone on the rack, traditional things we think of as torture, would not be torture because it doesn't lead to organ failure. It's amazing to me that, I mean, you, oh, yes, well, we all have our disagreements. The Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, the FISA courts, approve 99% plus of all documents presented to them. The head of the court will get up at 3 a.m. to approve documents. He will do it at all times. And in fact, you can even get a warrant and then approve it 48 hours later. Dick Cheney didn't think that was sufficient. So not only did he act in derogation of those courts, he didn't even tell them what he was doing. He didn't tell Congress what he was doing. He didn't tell the Republicans what he was doing. He didn't even tell, in many of these cases, the president what he was doing until after he already set it into motion.
Well, you know, the president approves everything. The article makes very clear that we don't have a rogue vice president. In fact, I can read you from the article that essentially says, Cheney is not, by nearly every inside account, the shadow president of popular lore. Bush has set his own course, not always in the directions that Cheney has preferred. So the idea that there's a rogue vice president out there running a secret government, secret country, is just not borne out by some rather in-depth reporting that the Washington Post has done on this particular topic. Now, let's talk about the FISA courts. In retrospect, my opinion is that they would have been better off using the FISA court than in circumventing the FISA court the way
better
they did.
Better off following the law.
The way they did initially. Well, now, remember, the president issued a finding. He had a legal opinion, and he issued a finding that this was consistent with the authority that was granted him by the resolution of Congress, which authorized not only force, but all other ancillary, you know, things that were necessary to prosecute the war. And well, that's not the exact quote, but essentially, it did authorize
Mike, it was
other things that were necessary. Other things that were necessary to successfully prosecute the war.
Look, that you can argue.
That's what it authorized.
I happen to know John Yoo. I went to law school with John Yoo, and I understand that he. And frankly, if you read through this...
For our listeners, John Yoo was one of the four lawyers who were involved in drafting most of the legal memoranda that were used to justify the things that the administration has done.
That is true. And if you read through these articles, you see Alberto Gonzalez and Harriet Myers kind of wandering around haplessly doing whatever the vice president wants them to do. And then you see the real thinkers in the administration, some of whom I disagree with, but honorable people like John Ashcroft, more honorable people like Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell, absolutely stunned that the vice president is breaking laws right and left and doing so behind their back. Not even Powell and Rice didn't know about these secret torture memos, not to mention Congress and the courts. What you say, Mike, is extremely troubling. You're saying that any time any lawyer, no matter the fact that he would be fired if he disagreed in an instant, that any time a lawyer writes on a piece of paper justifying what the president has done, you can call that, oh, it's not clear under the law. Let me give you an example. Let's say the president disbands Congress, takes power under martial law, and executes 100,000 American citizens. Now, he gets a legal opinion saying that's okay. You would argue that until it goes to the courts, well, it may be okay to disband Congress. It may be okay to execute 100,000 Americans without trial. There's really no way of knowing, after all. And so it's just a disagreement over policy.
No, there
aren't there limits?
There are, and that would certainly be a limit. Unless,
really? Why?
Well,
why?
Because
Commander-in-Chief, protecting the American people.
All right, what's the justification for that? Listening in on phone conversations between terrorists and people in the United States would seem to be justifiable.
How about listening in on non-terrorist conversations? That's also justifiable.
Once you ascertain who's the terrorist and who's not, then you move on.
So you know, listen to everyone.
I know how our intelligence system works. We don't have enough people to listen in to people talking to their girlfriends overseas. We just don't have enough people to listen to those conversations. They're looking for the bad ones. They're looking for the people who are plotting and actioning against the United States of America and the people. That's what they're looking for. They have computers that pick out keywords, that kick out conversations that can be listened to and translated at that time. We're not trying to listen into somebody talk to their girlfriend over in Europe.
Okay, tell me if this is the law or isn't it. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue. Not a few, no warrant shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be searched. Now, this is the Fourth Amendment.
Right.
Okay. Is this the law? Or can the president say, Fourth Amendment, Constitution, forget that. I'm just going to spy on everybody.
No. For the most part, the conversations I listen to, there has been probable cause. We're not just out there listening to everything.
Has there been a warrant? The Fourth Amendment requires a warrant. That's what's in this document. Now, if you want to rip up the Constitution and declare martial law, that's one thing. But no. The Constitution requires a warrant.
Well, I've already stipulated to the fact that I personally would have gone through the FISA court rather than going around the FISA court. I think that that's
Why do you think they did it, given that they approved 99% of the warrants and given that there's absolutely no you can't even name a circumstance. I defy you. I challenge you to name a single circumstance where someone should be spied on, the FISA court would be insufficient to protect that person.
Well, clearly there was at least 1% because we have 99% that worked and 1% that didn't.
Maybe those people were innocent.
Now, it's all classified, so you and I don't have the information on that.
But I'm talking about a systemic thing. The FISA court is set up as a secret court. It's set up to require not very much, basically the absolute minimum of probable cause. Mm-hmm. They approve more than 99% of the warrants. The FISA court can be gotten at 3 a.m. in the morning. Mm-hmm. They can be reached at all times, like a beeper and a doctor, only more available. And you can even go, if you need to, go and get a warrant for 72 hours and then get retroactive approval. Now, where in that law is something that the president needs to circumvent? Give me any example. Ticking time bomb, we have an example.
Well, I've already stipulated to the fact that my personal handling of this would have been to go through the FISA court rather than around it for a number of different reasons.
I want you to agree with me it was a lawless decision.
Well, no, they had an opinion that that justified what they were doing
based
on the resolution passed by Congress, which as you've complained about to me before, was an overly broad resolution.
The Supreme Court said by 8-1, that resolution definitely did not authorize this conduct.
And it didn't.
Okay, but here's the problem, Mike. It seems to me that what you're suggesting is the president can do anything as long as he's got some hack lawyer who will sign on to it, and then 3 years, 4 years later, maybe the courts will stop him. But in the meantime, you can get a lot of dirt.
In times of war, presidents have done extraordinary things. I remind you of a conversation we've had before about Abraham Lincoln suspending habeas corpus during the Civil War.
Legal under this document, as you know.
Is still an extraordinary act.
It's legal. I don't mind when the president does extraordinary things that are legal. We got to take a break, but let me just read going out. I'm going to read Article 1, Section 9 of my favorite document in the world, the United States Constitution. Quote, "The privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless, when in cases of rebellion or invasion, the public safety may require it." Now, I will not have you libel Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln knew this provision, and I don't think anyone can argue the Civil War was not a rebellion. It was. He cited this provision, and he suspended habeas corpus. What we have from this president is suspension of habeas corpus without rebellion or invasion. That's against the law.
But was it necessary?
Different question. It's lawless. 888-488-MARK. We'll be right back after this.
History has demonstrated that violence only begets greater violence. And injustice only begets greater injustice. This is not the tradition of our great nation. This is not how we want the United States to be known around the world. We have another tradition that we think ought to prevail. One that is more just and more powerful. There is a better way. If we truly want peace and security, then we must work hard for justice.
If you're concerned that we've become a nation whose national policies are grounded in beliefs that are centered on a line embedded in BS, then don't miss Escape from Orwellian Nation, a talk show in which concerned regular citizens like you and me, not self-serving media spinmeisters, wade through the barrage of newspeak and doublethink that pollutes public discourse today. Big Brother, big business, big media, and the big national parties who collude to keep we the people afraid and in the dark would prefer that you not watch. Show them who's in charge. Tune in to Escape from Orwellian Nation right here on Channel 10.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're discussing Dick Cheney. The Washington Post has, in my view, done a tremendous job yesterday, today, and also tomorrow and the next day, talking about the most powerful and, I believe, diabolical vice president in American history. This right here is just one example, The Unseen Path to Cruelty, talking about the ways in which Dick Cheney modified our laws, which used to prohibit cruel, inhumane, illegal conduct, to say that everything was just fine. Mike, before we went to break, you were talking about Lincoln, suspension of habeas corpus, and you were trying to make this into a policy argument. Now, first of all, just to be fair to good old Abe, you and I both agreed that it was the right policy to suspend habeas corpus in the time of the Civil War. Fair enough?
We weren't there, but in historical perspective, it probably was the right move.
And I have no problem with that. But I'm not talking about policy here. I'm not talking at all about policy here. I have no problem with policy differences. Policy differences are what makes America great. Checks and balances, the founders, open public debate, figure out what's right for the country and moving on. That, to me, what America's all about.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what Dick Cheney's all about, is it? He's about secret. He's about sneaking stuff through, not telling the courts, not telling Congress, not even telling Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell and John Ashcroft, hoping to torture as many people as he can, to violate as much of the Constitution as he can before it's disclosed and the courts find out about it and 5 years later put a stop to it. That's what he's about.
Let's be clear. He was not keeping most things permanently from the Secretary of State or the National Security Advisor or anything like that. He was keeping it from them during the development process, so that they couldn't weigh in and object to what he was doing. Subsequent to it, most of what had been done, they had a need to know that stuff, and they found out about it. Now, yeah, there were a couple things that they were not informed of, but the Secretary of Defense knew about them.
More than a couple of things. The most interesting is, I believe it was the torture memo, that they didn't find out for 2 years. 2 years after basically we have the Geneva Conventions, which is a treaty, which is a solemn obligation, which the Constitution says is the law of the land,
right,
where all the countries came together after the extreme evil of the Nazis to say, these are things beyond the pale, that we will not do these things to anybody. And all the countries came together, and what Condoleezza Rice didn't know, what Colin Powell didn't know, is that Dick Cheney was changing the law and saying, you can torture whoever you want as long as it doesn't lead to organ failure. So, you know, rape is fine. Certainly, virtually everything we saw at Abu Ghraib is fine. All of that is perfectly fine, and he didn't tell Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice about it. Now, he didn't tell them, you're absolutely right, because one of the things that dictators know well is that when you tell other people what you're doing, they have the power to stop it. So this was a way that he could go through. Do you think George Bush was well advised to basically get secret stuff from Dick Cheney and did not talk with Colin Powell or Condoleezza Rice or John Ashcroft or any of the many, many lawyers who would tell him it's illegal and to go through and secretly implement these awful things?
Look, Dick Cheney spent a career, including his time as chief of staff of the White House, he spent a career getting political consensus for things before he moved forward, believing... Believing that, you know, when you got that political consensus and you vetted it widely and you got buy-in, that you were better off than if you did things through a small circle or unilaterally or something like that. These particular measures, he believed, were so important to the successful prosecution of the war on terror that to allow them to become diluted, to allow them to become bogged down in the bureaucracy, and to allow them to be essentially decapitated by the whole vetting process was not in the best interest of the United States. So being an experienced person in government and knowing where the levers of power were and how to push the pressure points, he did that extraordinarily successfully.
You know,
and
I don't believe you believe what
things.
You're saying.
No, no. Oh, you asked me what I would do. I'm going to tell you. He was successful. Would I have done it that way? I would have done it the way Dick Cheney always did it, which is to vet it and bring people to a consensus on these things. And I think that some robust leadership would have brought a consensus on about 90% of what he was getting at. But he was so convinced and is convinced and thinks history will bear him out that these measures were so necessary in terms of protecting the United States in light of the significant and imminent threat that we faced from Al-Qaeda, that they were justified and necessary.
Let's not mislead the people watching this
show. No, that's what he thought.
Let's not mislead the people watching this show. He may have, under Gerald Ford, sought consensus when he didn't have the power role he had to play. But I know you've read these articles.
And time and time and time again. In fact, I can't think of a single time, at least in these articles, that he sought consensus. What he tries to do is to sneak it in. Let me read to you this quote. On February 2002 is when he first said that we can do anything. Cruelty is fine with him. Inhumane treatment is fine with him. Degrading treatment against a detainee, expressly prohibited by Geneva, expressly prohibited by the law of the land, absolutely fine. In February 02, on January 8, 2004, more than 2 years later, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice and Secretary of State Colin Powell learned of the two-year-old torture memo for the first time from an article in the Washington Post. Rice very angrily said there would be no more secret opinions on international and national security law. Unfortunately, she still didn't get her way.
Well,
are the Geneva Conventions wrong?
No.
Are they quaint? Are they archaic?
They're a little...
Do they need to be modified?
They need to be updated. They do need to be updated.
Which part do you want to see? More cruelty, more inhumanity, or more degrading stuff? Which part are you... I mean, because Cheney likes all of those. Which of those do you like?
Mark, let's define our terms. What is degrading? There are people who have articulated the point that if we have an illegal combatant Muslim who we've captured, that it's degrading to subject him to interrogation by a woman. Well, you know what? He's going to have to get over it.
That's not what we're talking about.
But that's the way it's misinterpreted, the way as soon as they get access to our courts, that's what they'll argue, and it'll be...
You have zero faith in our system of justice.
I have less than 50% faith in our courts, yes.
Okay, so you believe that basically we need a benevolent tyrant. I mean, that's what we need. We need a benevolent dictator, or not so benevolent dictator. I mean, what Cheney said is that we can do anything except organ failure or death. Death apparently was not allowed, although we have killed people in our custody.
Yes, we have.
Okay, all right. But
and
organ failure apparently is allowed. Let's talk about just things that I think of as torture. Chinese torture, I don't even know if it's true or not, but bamboo shoots under the fingernails. You got no problem with that, right?
No, I don't think that's very good, but there's...
Cheney thinks it's fine.
I didn't read in the article of anything about bamboo shoots.
I don't know. The point is that Cheney says that... all of this is fine. Anything except organ failure, and even when John McCain does his good deed and gets a vote from 90 to 9 of people in the Senate, overwhelming majority, he sticks in quickly a caveat to make sure, our defense can't do it. After all, it's they can override the president's veto.
Right.
And it wouldn't look good. It'd be unseemly to have the president say, no, I want to torture people, and the Congress saying, no, you can't. But he made sure the CIA can still torture people.
Well, that was part of the legislation. I mean, that was, McCain voted for it.
Cheney stuck it in. The point is, if you think that the Geneva Conventions ought to be changed, and I'm not so sure you do.
No, I think they need to be updated.
Okay.
I mean, it's a product of 60, 70 years ago.
Openly and honestly in consultation with other nations, or are you okay with what's going on to our troops? The same stuff that Cheney is doing to others.
Well, if the United Nations is any example of the way the Geneva Conventions will come out, if we were to, renegotiate these in an international forum and stuff like that, it's a very inefficient and never get there kind of way to do things.
So it's better to secretly violate them, despite the fact that the Constitution says that treaties are the law of the land.
No, I don't think it's good to secretly violate them. I think we probably went too far in a number of cases. Those should not have happened. I don't support them. I think that much of what the vice president was trying to accomplish is reasonable. Those particular excesses are not. But remember, Mark, we've had the conversation once upon a time ago, I forget how long, maybe a year, where I put to you the hypothetical. If we had a bad guy who knew everything about a nuclear bomb that was going to go off in New York City in about 12 hours, but yet we didn't know anything about it, would you consider that a time to throw the Constitution away and torture the guy until we got the information? And at that time, you thought, okay, whatever it takes to get the information out of this guy in the next 12 hours is what we got to do.
Here's
because we know that nuclear bomb's going off in New York City.
Here's the thing. And that's a different, it's a totally different case. I mean...
No, well, it's a matter of degree is
no,
what
no,
it
no,
is.
No, no,
it's
no.
a matter of degree and circumstances.
The problem is that 99.9999% of the time, that isn't the case. And what the president will do and the vice president will do, and it's happened time and time again throughout world history, mm-hmm. is they'll take an extreme case like the one you gave and use it to justify any kind of torture because you know and I know that information is imperfect. So what do? We don't know if this innocent farmer is a terrorist or not. Let's torture him to find out. We don't know if your call to your grandmother is innocent or not. Let's listen in and find out. According to Dick Cheney, there are no limits to the tyranny of the President of the United States, and that's what makes him a tyrant.
Let me scale down the hypothetical a little bit to make it more realistic in today's day and say that we capture one of the chief lieutenant bad guys over in Baghdad. And this is a guy who runs the operations for the resistance, the terrorist network over there, and he's the one that sets the ambushes and traps for our patrols that are out there. We know statistically in the next 3 days we're going to lose probably 6, 7, 8 soldiers to these kinds of attacks because that's what's been going on. Do we have the right then to use robust interrogation to get the information out of him as to how it works so that we can avoid losing those 6 or 7 or 8 soldiers over the next 3, 4 days?
Let me suggest to you, Mike, that not only is it bad as a matter of humanity to be known as the country that tortures, it's also bad policy. We're not going to get the information through torture. None of our NATO allies torture. Israel, a country that's been through more terrorism than far more than the United States has ever been, probably more than any other country in the world, doesn't torture. And one of the reasons they don't do it, one, it is humane, inhumane. But the other thing is that it doesn't work. What they find is that deception works better than torture. That if you trick terrorists, you actually get more done. It's more effective than torture.
If you have the time. If you have the time.
Is that we have learned, for example, we now know that the whole manufactured evidence of Iraq having some al-Qaeda tie came from a guy we tortured. We tortured the guy, and he was forced to say, oh, there's a connection, because he said anything we wanted him to say. Because we tortured that man, we now have 3,500 Americans dead, we have tens of thousands wounded, we have $500 billion lost, all because we tortured a guy into a lie. Let me suggest to you that torture was not very successful.
Well, that's a ludicrous proposition that, that was the proximate cause
removing
Saddam
from office.
No, I think
oil was a large part of it. But the point is,
that was not the proximate cause of removing Saddam from office.
You get wrong information when you torture someone.
It depends on there are other interrogation techniques that work well. It depends on how much time you have. But let's go back to some specific things. John McCain was able to engineer a bill through that you just alluded to that defined waterboarding as torture. Now, I don't think waterboarding is torture at all. In fact, I think it's ludicrous to call it torture. But here's the thing. There is virtually no example of anybody who's been waterboarded who hasn't coughed up the information and accurate information at that.
You don't know that. You have no idea. No. You're just guessing.
Who's the...
You're just guessing.
The widespread reports on...
Khalid Sheikh Mohammed.
Waterboarded, okay, 30 seconds. You win. What do you want to know?
Yeah, I'll tell you anything.
I'll
tell you everything.
Useful stuff.
It won't be true, but I'll tell you everything you want to hear. You want to hear that Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden were secret lovers? I'll tell it to you. I'll tell you anything you want me to tell you. Just please make the torture stop.
There have been no suggestions that what we got from Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was bad information.
Here's the problem.
Most of the reports are that it was darn good intelligence and helped us out immensely.
Whatever policy decision you have on any topic, is it wrong to insist that we follow the Constitution of the United States? Is it wrong to insist that we do so only after open and honest debate, that we only do so through the checks and balances that our founders wanted? Or is anything the tyrant Cheney says, does it go? 888-488-MARK. You can also comment on the blog at radioinsidescoop.com. Call in. We'll be right back after.
On it. Mommy's gun fell on the floor. I was a cowboy. Bang, 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 bang. I said, Jenny, wake up, wake up. It's just pretend. But she wouldn't wake up.
If you give me a fish...
If you give someone a fish...
You feed them for a day.
Teach someone to fish.
You feed them for a lifetime.
Give me a fish, and you'll feed me for a day. Teach me to fish, and you'll feed me for a lifetime.
Through Volunteers of America, you can help change lives in your community.
Oh, hey, mister. Studied algebra in school and got a better job than I could. You take the last cup.
No, mister. Stuck in an entry-level job because you only learned basic math. I don't have a boss riding my butt like you do, so you take it so you can get back to your desk.
You know, I probably should, but maybe Miss AP Calculus with the $200 haircut in the big office upstairs would like a cup.
Oh, no, mister. What was your name again? Never mind, it doesn't matter. I'm too busy doing important things to care. I just came down for some sweet and stir.
You know, if my limited math abilities weren't keeping me from getting a better job, I'd quit this afternoon.
I don't blame you. But thank goodness you're stuck here because we really need someone to make the coffee.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Last chance to call, and the toll-free number is 888-488-MARK.
Mark, I have to interrupt this just a little bit. We have a little something special. We've blown through our first 100 live shows.
Oh, okay.
And in honor of that, I would like to pour a little bubbly.
All right.
Amen.
All right. As we drunkenly discuss the tyranny of the vice president.
Do our viewers know that this is our producer?
Our esteemed CEO.
And
of
CEO
Channel 10.
Of Channel 10, right.
That's right.
Jim Southworth.
And also a producer. And this is a wonderful surprise. And I didn't realize this is our 100th show.
Actually, we're going just through 100 already. And that's quite an accomplishment considering the amount of time we've done it.
It is indeed.
Thank you.
Congratulations, Mark.
Congratulations, Mark.
Congratulations, Jim.
And thank you, Mike, for being my most prolific guest by far.
Thank you. Actually. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
And now they're giving me the time to leave.
I still got much more to attack with Dick Cheney.
to our audience.
To our audience. I've never drunk on the air before, see? Yes, to our audience. Absolutely. Thank you for keeping us on the air. Thank you for continuing.
There's something incredibly civilized about champagne.
Well, it calms you down a little bit. It's actually very good champagne, Jim. Thank you very much. You've made me break down out of character. Let me try to sum up here, because I think there are some points we agree on, and I want to make those very clear to the listeners. I think you've already agreed that the vice president's choices on torture, on the FISA court, which is warrantless surveillance, that he went too far.
He should not have gone around the court. I think for a couple of reasons, not the least of which, I'll agree with you on your reasons, but not the least of which was political. I think that there was a downside in terms of loss of support by not using the FISA court when indeed, as you point out, it probably would not have been any efficiency lost by going that route.
None for guilty people. I mean, yes, we probably could have prosecuted less innocent people. It would have been harder to torture innocent people. So that would have been a loss. I'll grant you that. But in terms of actually fighting the war on terror, it wouldn't have been a problem.
But to our knowledge now, the administration is using the FISA court, and to our knowledge, it's working out well. To our knowledge.
I doubt it. Because what we've learned throughout from these articles is time and time and time again, the vice president finds a loophole that you can drive a truck through and then basically convinces the president to sign it. To me, it reminds me of Rasputin or Cardinal Richelieu or any of these other great demonic figures in world history.
Cardinal Richelieu is not demonic. The man's a saint.
What they do is they basically take weak and ineffectual leaders and they say, just sign this. Time and time and time again, you're right. Bush is approving what Cheney's doing, and most of the time he's doing without even counsel from anybody else.
And it has not been vetted as widely as I would prefer, because I think you do avoid some of the pitfalls by vetting a little bit more widely. What the vice president was afraid of was that when you vet it out too far and it gets bogged down in the bureaucracy, that it just dies a bureaucratic death. And that was something he was not willing to tolerate. He thought this was way too important to let that happen.
A bureaucratic death, to me, is a euphemism. If the vice president knew that if too many people knew about it, they would know he was absolutely breaking the law,
the people,
they didn't want to let him break the law.
Everything dies when too many people know about it, because it gives people a chance to organize opposition and things like that. I mean, come on. I mean,
how about good ideas?
Very few get through. Even good ideas, very few get through, because even good ideas have enemies that if you let them organize for the attack, it's not going to happen.
The irony is, he was not only keeping things secret from the courts and from Congress, but from people in his own administration, people who would be ideological bedfellows, people who I don't think you're going to trash, like Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell and John Ashcroft. So he kept it secret from them. You know why? Because they thought it was illegal. That's why he kept it secret.
The vice president knew that he would get opposition from Secretary Powell on much of this stuff. He probably did not put National Security Advisor, now Secretary of State Rice, completely in that category, but certainly would have anticipated that she would want to vet and water down some of the things that he did. I would have, if I was the National Security Advisor, I would have insisted on a role in that, and I would have watered down some of the things that he did as well. But remember, he was after maximum efficiency, maximizing war power for the president, so that the president would have the opportunity to go out and prosecute the war without worrying about what the reaction, the bureaucracy, and the legalisms of it all were going to be. His objective was to make sure the president had what he needed to successfully prosecute the war on terror. That was his motivation.
Have you read George Orwell's 1984?
I have. One of my favorite books.
Mine too. 1984, as you know, describes a perpetual war.
Mm-hmm.
A war without end, much like our occupation of Iraq, where the head uses the, oh, we're in a war, to basically take away everyone's civil liberties, to basically spy on everybody, and to live in a place where everyone must love Big Brother, and if not, they'll be tortured. It seems to me that you cannot understand what Vice President Cheney has done without reading 1984.
Well, first of all, everybody should. It used to be required reading in high school. I don't know what's happened to our educational system if it's not still required reading. It's a good book. I don't know if the analogy holds up as well as you would like it to hold up, but I'll second your motion that everybody ought to read it if they haven't, and they can draw their own conclusions. I think a reasonable person would say, no, that's a lot beyond what we're talking about in the Washington Post here.
Let's get to some last specifics. The vice president's lawyer has said that the Geneva Conventions, which, again, I'm going to pull out my old constitution because it's the thing that Dick Cheney hates the most, and the only thing they have that can protect you. Friends, if you're going to Guantanamo Bay, try to bring this document. They will try to rip it from your hands. This is the only shield you have. The Constitution says that the Constitution, this is Article 6, this Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made, or which shall be made, under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. And every judge and every state and everything, everyone shall be bound thereby. Now, Dick Cheney holds otherwise. Dick Cheney, his lawyer at least, has said that the laws prohibiting people from committing torture don't apply to the commander-in-chief because, quote, Congress may no more regulate the president's ability to detain and interrogate enemy combatants than it may regulate his ability to direct troop movements on the battlefield, unquote. You don't buy that, do you?
You know, I do. That's one of the ones that I can fairly enthusiastically defend. I mean, you know, Congress has developed this ridiculous need to try and micromanage all wars and do this. You know, Congress ought to appropriate the funds and get out of the way. There is nothing that is more guaranteed to lose a war than to have a bunch of idiot congressmen and senators out there micromanaging the thing, telling the troops where to go, how to fight, what to do. It's ludicrous. You know, wars are serious business. Wars are messy. Wars are violent. And wars are ugly. And you need a president and a commander-in-chief who can go out there and just brutally direct the activities of the troops to prosecute to victory. Congress is awful under those circumstances.
We need to amend Article 1, Section 8, then, which says that Congress has the right to declare war, to make rules concerning captures on land and water. These are direct quotes here.
Mm-hmm.
To make rules for the government and regulation of the land and naval forces. To provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia and governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States.
I mean, all this stuff. You really hate our Constitution.
That's all peacetime stuff. I mean, you know, all you're talking about. Yeah.
How about the right to declare war? Is that peacetime?
It is before you declare it, yes.
Okay. But Congress didn't declare war, did they?
But Congress hasn't declared war since 1941 or whenever it was. Right.
That's correct. So this idea that the president has all these terrific powers in wartime, you'd have to agree when Congress doesn't declare war, he doesn't have these powers.
There's a de facto war going on. And
There's
a de facto war going on.
You know, that's what Big Brother said in 1984. War is peace.
When the Congress authorizes the use of military force, that is the de facto equivalent
of Congress...
That means the
president can spy on American citizens, right?
No, it depends on what the authorization says.
Well, but the authorization doesn't mention it, but the president can, right?
If the authorization allows him to take such other actions that are necessary to prosecute the war to the fullest extent...
Then he can spy on American citizens that have nothing to do with Iraq, right? He can put people in jail even if it has nothing to do with Congress's authorization.
If they're enemy combatants taken on the battlefield, absolutely, yes.
Mike... When do you think the words enemy combatants were first used in legal parlance? I'll give you a hint.
All right, tell me.
It's the 21st century.
All right.
It's this decade.
Right.
All right?
Right.
Maybe some legal theoretician used it before, but no law school that I know ever taught it. This is a made-up jargon.
All right.
And it's a made-up jargon for people who want to avoid the Constitution.
Are you suggesting they're prisoners of war?
The Geneva Conventions defines prisoners of war. It also defines treatment of civilians. In the Persian Gulf War, George Herbert Walker Bush had more than 1,700 determinations on the battlefield as to whether someone was a combatant or was a civilian, and he gave them due process on the battlefield, not full due process in our courts. That's the way we did this in World War II. That's the way we did this in Korea. That's the way we did this in Vietnam. This is the first president in world history to ever say, we're just going to throw people in jail for 5 years, not give them access to a lawyer or evidence.
No. In any war, every side has always held the prisoners of war, enemy combatants, capturees, whatever you want to call them, they've always held them until the cessation of hostilities. No one has ever just, captured, this capture and release thing is
and yet we're doing
idiot.
It. No, we're doing it. We're doing it. Why are we doing it? Because we don't have any evidence that these people have done anything wrong.
Well, we captured them on the battlefield. That's the first thing they did wrong.
Not all of them.
Now, if it turns
out... A lot of them we didn't. Some were taxi drivers in Afghanistan that ended up in Guantanamo Bay. Here's the heart of it. We only got a few seconds left. The heart of it is without due process, without the Constitution, without checks and balances, we can't be sure that anything is being done in a lawful manner. And it's the lawlessness that I most condemn strongly of this vice president and this administration.
Well, I agree with you. The Constitution is paramount. We need to observe it like every law and every treaty and everything else. It's all subject to interpretation. There are people who interpret it and there are people who interpret it this way. The vice president has perhaps gone further than I would have in some circumstances, but his mission is to protect the people of the United States, as is the president's, and they've done a good job.
There was a time, I recall, when Republicans used to consider themselves strict constructionists. Now we know the truth. The only strict constructionists and textualists are liberals who protect the Constitution of the United States.